Alright, we're continuing chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And here we go. Harry went down to breakfast the next morning with the rest of the boys in his dormitory, all of whom seemed to think the firebolt deserved a sort of guard of honor. As Harry entered the great hall, heads turned in the direction of the firebolt, and there was a good deal of excited muttering. Harry saw, with enormous satisfaction, that the Slytherin team were all looking thunderstruck. "Did you see his face?" said Ron gleefully, looking back at Malfoy. "He can't believe it. This is brilliant." Wood, too, was basking in the reflected glory of the firebolt. "Put it here, Harry," he said, laying the broom in the middle of the table and carefully turning it so that its name faced upward. People from the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables were soon coming over to look. Cedric Diggory came over to congratulate Harry on having acquired such a superb replacement for his Nimbus, and Percy's Ravenclaw girlfriend, Penelope Clearwater, actually asked if she could actually hold the firebolt.
Now, Penny, no sabotage," said Percy heartily, as she examined the firebolt closely.
"Penelope and I have got a bet on," he told the team, 10 galleons on the outcome of the match."
"Oh, there you go, Penelope. That's where Penny comes from."
"Oh, it is. I didn't even make that connection, even though he just said that." That's funny. Penelope.
Hmm.
There you go. See, but doesn't Penelope sound like a...
It does. Very aristocratic.
Yeah. Her name's Penelope Clearwater. Penelope put the firebolt down again, thanked Harry, and went back to her table.
"Harry, make sure you win," said Percy in an urgent whisper. "I haven't got 10 galleons.
"Yes, I'm coming, Penny."
And he bustled off to join her in a piece of toast.
That's a weird thing to join someone in.
Yeah.
"Surely you can manage that broom, Potter," said a cold, drawling voice. Draco Malfoy had arrived for a closer look, Crabbe and Goyle right behind him.
"Yeah, I reckon so," said Harry casually. "Got plenty of special features, hasn't it?" said Malfoy, eyes glittering maliciously. "Shame it doesn't come with a parachute, in case you get too near a Dementor."
Crabbe and Goyle sniggered.
"Pity you can't attach an extra arm to yours, Malfoy," said Harry. "Then it could catch the snitch for you."
The Gryffindor team laughed loudly. Malfoy's pale eyes narrowed, and he walked away. They watched him rejoin the rest of the Slytherin team, who put their heads together, no doubt asking Malfoy whether Harry's broom was really a firebolt. At 11:15, the Gryffindor team set off for the locker rooms. The weather couldn't have been more different from their match against Hufflepuff. It was a clear, cool day with a very light breeze. There would be no visibility problems this time, and Harry, though nervous, was starting to feel the excitement only a Quidditch match could bring. They could hear the rest of the school moving into the stadium beyond. Harry took off his black school robe, removed his wand from his pocket, and stuck it inside his t-shirt he was going to wear under his Quidditch robes. He only hoped he wouldn't need it. He wondered suddenly whether Professor Lupin was in the crowd watching.
"You know what we've got to do," said Wood, as they prepared to leave the locker rooms. "If we lose this match, we'll be out of the running. Just fly like you did in practice yesterday, and we'll be okay."
They walked out onto the field to tumultuous applause. The Ravenclaw team, dressed in blue, were already standing out in the middle of the field. Their seeker, Cho Chang, was the only girl on the team. She was shorter than Harry by about a head, and Harry couldn't help but noticing, nervous as he was, she was extremely pretty. She smiled at Harry as the teams faced each other behind their captains, and he felt a slight lurch in the region of his stomach that he didn't think had anything to do with his nerves.
He doesn't even know.
I don't know. I think he knows. Hey, he should know. You know.
Think about kids and nerves.
Yeah, Harry and Joe sitting in drinking.
On with the book.
Okay. "Would Davies shake hands?" Madam Hooch said briskly.
I think her name is Madame Hooch.
I know.
And Wood shook hands with the Ravenclaw captain. Mount your brooms, on my whistle. 3, 2, 1. Harry kicked off into the air, and the firebolt zoomed higher and faster than any other broom. He soared around the stadium and began squinting around for the Snitch, listening all the while to the commentary, which was being provided by the Weasley twins' friend, Lee Jordan. Did I have an accent for Lee? Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
It's a boy, okay. They're off. And the big excitement of this match is the fireball that Harry Potter is flying.
He has kind of a Cockney accent, doesn't he?
Oh, he does? I don't know. They don't have any, like, accent marks, so. But I can do Cockney. Maybe. How do you do a Cockney? They're off. And the big excitement for this match is the fireball.
I know you're trying to do wood.
Yeah.
You could do kind of a ghetto accent.
I'm blanking. Start me off. They're off. And the big excitement.
Okay. Just read it normally.
They're off, and the big excitement for this match is the firebolt that Harry Potter is flying for Gryffindor. According to Which Broomstick, the firebolt's going to be the broom of choice for the national teams at this year's World Championship. Jordan, would you mind telling us what's going on in the match? Interrupted Professor McGonagall's voice. Right you are, Professor. Just giving a bit of background information. The firebolts, incidentally.
Just giving a bit of background information.
Oh, there you go. Just giving a bit of background information. The firebolt.
No, you can't do it.
The firebolt, incidentally.
No, has you a can't do it. Auto You're... brake. Go back to the.
The firebolt, incidentally, has a built-in auto brake. And Jordan. Okay. Gryffindor in possession. Katie Bell of Gryffindor heading for goal. Harry streaked past Katie in the opposite direction, gazing around for a glint of gold and noticing that Cho Chang was tailing him closely. She was undoubtedly a very good flyer. She kept cutting across him, forcing him to change direction. "Show her your acceleration, Harry!" Fred yelled as he whooshed past her in pursuit of a bludger that was aiming for Alicia. Harry urged the firebolt forward as they rounded the Ravenclaw goalposts. And Cho fell behind. Just as Katie succeeded in scoring the first goal of the match, and the Gryffindor end of the field went wild, he saw it. The Snitch was close to the ground, flitting near one of the barriers. Harry dived. Cho saw what he was doing and tore after him. Harry was speeding up, excitement flooding him. Dives were his specialty. He was 10 feet away. And then a bludger, hit by one of the Ravenclaw beaters, came pelting out of nowhere. Harry veered off course, avoiding it by an inch, and in those few crucial seconds, Snitch had vanished. There was a great ooh of disappointment from the Gryffindor supporters. Much applause for their beater from the Ravenclaw end. You could probably get killed by one of those things,
yeah.
Huh? If you don't notice. Mm-hmm. George Weasley vented his feelings by hitting the second bludger directly at the offending beater, who was forced to roll right over it in midair to avoid it. Gryffindor leads 80 points to 0. And how did they get 80 points all of a sudden?
Just read.
Okay. And look at that firebolt go. Potter's really putting it through the paces now. See it turn. Chang's comet is no match for it. The firebolt's precision balance is really noticeable in these long... Jordan, are you being paid to advertise firebolts? Get on with the commentary. Ravenclaw was pulling back. They had scored 3 goals, which put Gryffindor only 50 points ahead. If Cho got the Snitch before him, Ravenclaw would win. Isn't that what basically always happens? Harry dropped lower, narrowly avoiding a Ravenclaw chaser, scanning the field frantically. A glint of gold, a flutter of tiny wings. The Snitch was circling the Gryffindor goalpost. Harry accelerated, his eyes fixed on the speck of gold ahead. But just then, Cho appeared out of thin air, blocking him. "Harry, this is no time to be a gentleman," Wood roared as Harry swerved to avoid a collision. Knock her off her broom if you have to. Harry turned and caught sight of Cho. She was grinning. The Snitch had vanished again.
Ugh.
Harry turned his firebolt upward. He was soon 20 feet above the game. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Cho following him. She decided to mark him rather than search for the Snitch herself. All right, then, if she wanted to tail him, she'd have to take the consequences. Harry dived again, and Cho, thinking he'd seen the Snitch, tried to follow. Harry pulled out of the dive very sharply.
She hurled downward. He rose fast as a bullet once more and then saw it. For the third time, the snitch was glittering way above the field at the Ravenclaw end. He accelerated. So many feet below did Cho. He was winning, gaining on the snitch every second, and then... Oh! Screamed Cho, pointing. Distracted, Harry looked down.
Damn it, Harry!
Three Dementors. Three tall, black, hooded Dementors were looking up at him.
No, with those Slytherins, I bet you anything.
He didn't stop to think. Plunging a hand down his neck, the neck of his robes, he whipped out his wand and roared, Expecto Patronum! Something silvery white, something enormous, erupted from the end of his wand. He knew it had shot directly at the Dementors, but didn't pause to watch. His mind was still miraculously clear. He looked ahead. He was nearly there. He stretched out the hand, still grasping his wand, and just managed to close his fingers around the small, struggling snitch.
Yes!
Madame Hooch's whistle sounded.
Hooch!
That's what it sounds like. Harry turned around in midair and saw six scarlet blurs bearing down on him. The next moment, the whole team was hugging him so hard he was nearly pulled off his broom. Down below, he could hear the roars of Gryffindors in the crowd. That's my boy, Wood kept yelling. Alicia, Angelina, and Katie had all kissed him. Fred had him in a grip so tight, Harry felt as though his head would come off. In complete disarray, the team managed to make its way back down to the ground. Harry got off his broom and looked up to see a gaggle of Gryffindor supporters sprinting onto the field, Ron in the lead. Before he knew it, he had been engulfed by the cheering crowd. Yes! Ron yelled, yanking Harry's arm into the air. Yes, yes. Well done, Harry, said Percy, looking delighted. 10 galleons to me. Must find Penelope, excuse me.
10 galleons, I didn't do
much. I know. Good for you, Harry, roared Seamus Finnegan. Ruddy brilliant, boomed Hagrid over the heads of the milling Gryffindors. That was quite some Patronus, said a voice in Harry's ear. Harry turned around to see Professor Lupin, who looked both shaken and pleased. The Dementors didn't affect me at all, said Harry excitedly. I didn't feel a thing. That would be because they weren't Dementors, said Professor Lupin. Come and see. He led Harry out of the crowd until they were able to see the edge of the field. You gave Mr. Malfoy quite a fright, said Lupin. Harry stared. Lying in a crumpled heap on the ground were Malfoy, Crabbe, Goyle, and Marcus Flint, the Slytherin team captain, all struggling to remove themselves from a long black hooded robes. It looked as though Malfoy had been standing on Goyle's shoulders, standing over them with an expression of the utmost fury on her face was Professor McGonagall. An unworthy trick, she was shouting, a low and cowardly attempt to sabotage the Gryffindor Seeker. Detention for all of you. I shall be speaking to Professor Dumbledore about this. Make no mistake. Ah, here he comes now. If anything could have set the seal on Gryffindor's victory, it was this. Ron, who had fought his way through to Harry's side, doubled up with laughter as they watched Malfoy fighting to extricate himself from the robe. Goyle's head stuck still inside it. Come on, Harry, said George, fighting his way over. Party, Gryffindor common room, now. Right, said Harry, and feeling happier than he had in ages, he and the rest of the team led the way, still in their scarlet robes, out of the stadium and back up to the castle. Should we keep going? It felt as though they had already won the Quidditch Cup. Party went on all day and well into the night. Fred and George disappeared for a couple of hours and returned with an armful of bottles of butterbeer, pumpkin fizz, and several bottles full of Honeyduke sweets. How did you do that? Squealed Angelina Johnson as George started throwing peppermint toads at the ground. You know, I'll bet Fred and George get a lot of you know what.
Yeah, I bet they do too. Say it.
No, this is for children. You can say it if you want. What do they get a lot of?
Chocolate.
With a little help from Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs, Fred muttered in Harry's ear.
Only one person wasn't joining in the festivities. Hermione, incredibly, was sitting in a corner attempting to read an enormous book entitled Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles. Harry broke away from the table where Fred and George had started juggling butterbeer bottles and went over to her. "Did you even come to the match?" he asked. "Of course I did," said Hermione in a strangely high-pitched voice, not looking up. "I'm very glad we won, and I think you did really well, but I need to read this by Monday." "Come on, Hermione, come and have some food," said Harry, looking over at Ron and wondering whether he was in a good enough mood to bury the hatchet. "I can't, Harry, I've still got 422 pages to read," said Hermione, now sounding slightly hysterical. "Anyway," she glanced over at Ron, too, "he doesn't want me to join in." There was no arguing with this, as Ron chose that moment to say loudly, "If Scabbers hadn't just been eaten, he would have really liked some of those fudge flies." Hermione burst into tears.
Aww.
Man, Ron is such a jerk.
Well, yeah, but still.
Before Harry could say or do anything, she tucked the enormous book under her arm and, still sobbing, ran to the staircase, to the girls' dormitories and out of sight. "Can't you give her a break?" Harry said to Ron. "No," said Ron flatly. "If she just acted like she was sorry, but she'll never admit she was wrong, Hermione. She's still acting like Scabbers has gone on vacation or something." The Gryffindor party ended only when Professor McGonagall turned up in her tartan dressing gown and hairnet at 1 a.m, insisting that they all go to bed. Oh, it's only 1? I was imagining they're saying, like, and well into the night. I imagined it was, like, 3 or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're, like, 8th graders.
Mm-hmm.
So. Harry and Ron climbed the stairs to their dormitory, still discussing the match. It's so weird. Like, what's there to discuss? He caught the snitch, you know? If they didn't have the stupid secret position, it might have been an entertaining thing to discuss, you know? People scoring goals. Sorry.
I like the seeker. It's cool.
It's cool. At last, exhausted.
You know, you would be a seeker, because you're fast.
That's true. I'd be an awesome seeker. I would seek the shit out of that thing. At last, exhausted, Harry climbed into bed. Twitched the hangings of his four-poster shut. What? Twitched the hangings of his four-poster shut. To block out a ray of moonlight. I don't understand what that sentence means. Anyways. Okay, closed the shades to block out a ray of moonlight. Lay back and felt himself almost instantly drifting off to sleep. He had a very strange dream. He was walking through a forest, his firebolt over his shoulder, following something silvery white. It was winding its way through the trees ahead, and he could only catch glimpses of it between the leaves. Anxious to catch up with it, he sped up, but as he moved faster, so did his quarry. Harry broke into a run. Ahead, he heard hooves gathering speed. Now he was running flat out, and ahead he could hear galloping. Then, he turned a corner into a clearing and... Harry woke as suddenly as though he'd been hit in the face. Disoriented, and in total darkness, he fumbled with his hangings. He could hear movements around him, and Seamus Finnegan's voice from the other side of the room. What's going on? Harry thought he had heard the dormitory door slam. At last, finding the divide in his curtains, he ripped them back. At the same time, the same moment, Dean Thomas lit up his lamp. Ron was sitting up in bed, his hangings torn from one side, a look of utmost terror on his face. Black, Sirius Black, with a knife. What? Here, just now. Slashed the curtains. Woke me up. You sure you weren't dreaming, Ron? Said Dean. Look at the curtains. I tell you, he was here. They all scrambled out of bed. Harry reached the dormitory door first, and they sprinted back down the staircase. Doors opened behind them, and sleepy voices called after them.
Who shouted? What are you doing? The common room was lit with the glow of the dying fire, still littered with debris from the party. It was deserted. Are you sure you weren't dreaming, Ron? I'm telling you, I saw him. It's all the noise. Okay, well, let's end the chapter. Professor McGonagall told us to go to bed. A few of the girls had come down their staircase, pulling on dressing gowns and yawning. Boys, too, were reappearing. Excellent, are we carrying on? Said Fred Weasley brightly. Everyone back upstairs, said Percy, hurrying into the common room and pinning his head badge to his pajamas as he spoke. Purse, Sirius Black, Ron said faintly, in our dormitory, with a knife, woke me up. The common room went very still. Nonsense, said Percy, looking startled. You had too much to eat, Ron. I had a nightmare. I'm telling you. Now, enough's enough, really. Professor McGonagall was back. She slammed the portrait behind her as she entered the common room and stared furiously around. I'm delighted that Gryffindor won the match, but this is getting ridiculous. Percy, I expected better of you. I certainly didn't authorize this, Professor, said Percy, puffing himself up indignantly. I was just telling you to get back to bed. My brother Ron had a nightmare. It wasn't a nightmare, Ron yelled. Professor, I woke up, and Sirius Black was standing over me holding a knife. Professor McGonagall stared at him. Don't be ridiculous, Weasley. How could you have possibly gotten through the portrait hole? Ask him, said Ron, pointing a shaking finger at the back of Sir Cadogan's picture. Ask him if he saw. Glaring suspiciously at Ron, Professor McGonagall pushed the portrait back and went outside. The whole common room listened with bated breath. Sir Cadogan, did you just let a man enter Gryffindor Tower? Certainly, good lady, said Sir Cadogan. There was a stunned silence, both inside and outside the common room. You did? Said Professor McGonagall. But the password? He had him, said Sir Cadogan proudly. Had the whole list, my lady. Read him off a little piece of paper. Professor McGonagall pulled herself back through the portrait to face the stunned crowd. She was white as chalk. Which person, she said, her voice shaking, which abysmally foolish person wrote down this week's passwords and left them lying around? There was utter silence, broken by the smallest of terrified squeaks. Neville Longbottom, trembling from his head to his fluffy, slippered toes, raised his hand slowly in the air. Poor Neville. And that's the end of chapter 13. Chapter 14 is called Snape's Grudge. I hope you like that, my boo. And it's bedtime. Oh, sorry. I love you so much, Kitty. You're such a sweet girl. Sleep well.